oh boy, we're back again.
Oh my goodness.
Some history or his story. I'm Dan.
I'm Panda.
I'm going to talk history with a couple of my buddies here.
Hey, I'm Panda. I wanted to jump in earlier, but yeah, hey, history.
How you doing, buddy?
Hey, so pumped to be here.
So pumped to be here.
I'm Brand. I'm on a delay.
Yeah, you're a little bit on a delay, Brand.
Happy December, boys.
Oh, we're excited to be here. You guys have been listening. The ratings and reviews have been wonderful.
Yeah, really,
we've been
really
appreciative. Top 100 history podcast. Can you believe it? Continue to tell your friends. Go to the Apple Podcast. Leave us a rating and review. Be kind. Send me an email when things don't quite work out on the story. Which...
And rewind.
All right.
You feel good about it. You said be kind.
Yeah. That's a joke when VHS tapes were rented.
Yeah, Blockbuster.
Yeah. That'll make an appearance on an episode, I'm sure, at some point.
Ooh, I can't wait.
I'm going to get it right. Blockbuster's closed.
It sure is.
There's one still open in Alaska, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not really a Blockbuster.
Last I heard. Yeah. Man, what it's so good to be here because of I have been thinking about how much I love history now because of this podcast.
Yeah, I know. You told me that every day. You're like, dude, you've changed my life.
I have.
You're going to go get a history degree.
I got a history tattoo. Yeah. It just says history.
That's it.
And Times New Roman.
Wow. Yeah. Bold. Not Comic
Sans. Is it because of Roman?
Yes.
And you were like, that's history.
I love Rome.
New.
Rome's fallen. Have you heard about it?
I have, believe it or not. Guys, if you just join in for the first time, basically this goes a little something like this. I used to teach history back in the day. These two guys are good friends of mine. We do another podcast called Deck the Hallmark. You may have heard of it. And I tell these guys three stories that are themed from United States history. Now, here's the thing. One of those three stories is a lie that I've made up myself.
You've been lying this whole time?
The whole time. And I will tell the story in its entirety. These guys get 3 minutes to ask me questions, a little Q&A, if you will. And then at the end of those three stories, they will have to decide for themselves which one is my story. Now, you have been claiming that you're about to go on a streak.
I am. Well, I feel like I have been on a streak. It's a losing one.
It's close, though.
Yeah.
It's 3-2?
I think it's like 3-2.
Is it 3-2?
I don't remember. It's been a little while since we've actually recorded an episode.
We did a podcast.
But I know I'm on a losing streak. My winning streak is about to begin. I will not lose in December.
Yeah.
The month of December, I will not lose.
Will not lose the month of December.
I will not lose in the month of December.
Coincidentally, it's December right now.
Yes.
Here we go. So these three stories are basically all themed under the headline Happy Cold War, which basically means it's from the Cold War in United States history, but they're happy or at least fun stories of things that happened that meant the Cold War wasn't all just dreary and awful all the time.
This is fun, though, because December's cold.
Yeah, exactly. That's why that's fun. For sure.
Baby, it's cold outside.
Baby, it's cold outside. I don't know what.
Don't you know that song's terrible?
Oh, so bad. Okay, so happy Cold War.
Yeah.
I love it.
So before we get started, just a little bit of information about the Cold War that you need to know to help you contextualize these three stories. The Cold War.
This is true?
This is all true. Okay. Yes. The Cold War takes place between the United States and the Soviet Union through roughly the years of 1945 to 1991. Now, it's hard to really measure that aside from in those years because there was no actual fighting between the two countries. Was there fighting during the Cold War? Yes. Korean War, Vietnam War, just to name a few. There were a lot of different stages of the Cold War, and basically they go a little something like this. To start, there was expansion and containment. Both sides were trying to build their military, build their power, expand their empires to make sure the other didn't spread. Communism versus democracy or versus capitalism, depending on how you want to read it. And containment, like the United States wanted to contain communism.
Sure.
And they were scared of communism. Escalation and nuclear proliferation. Now, you know what proliferation means.
Yes, it means to hold back, but not a lot.
Oh, really?
Just a little.
It's a little hold back.
It's a little hold back.
Close. It means to grow rapidly. So nuclear proliferation meant both the Soviet Union and the United States were building up their military might, specifically their nuclear weapons, at an exponential rate.
Do you know how you grow rapidly?
How?
You hold back, but just a little bit.
That's how you proliferate?
That's exactly right.
Learn something new every day. There's a little period called détente, which is a fancy word for?
Nope.
Fancy
sausage.
Word for?
Sausage.
Sausage? Yeah. It was a part of the Cold War where they all went, everybody eat a détente. No, détente is it's kind of a chilling, a thawing, if you will.
You say
hence
that.
The word nope.
Yeah, hence the word nope.
You say that as if sausage, a sausage pause is so outlandish.
A sausage pause?
Yes.
Yeah, detente means sausage paws. That's a direct translation. Yes. It's paws that look like sausage.
Oh, man. Hey, everybody, get you with my detentes.
Man, his hands were huge. They were like detentes. Then lastly, we have basically Reagan, Gorbachev, and the end of the Soviet Union. Those are our stages of the Cold War. Here we go. Here are your three titles, and I will let you determine which order you want them. I will read them in chronological order. Number one, the Russians create a spoof play after the spy plane incident.
It was hard
to come up with a good name for that one.
Spoof
play, spy plane. That's the way to do it. Number two, JFK and Khrushchev both love puppies.
Oh, I love puppies.
JFK and Khrushchev both love puppies. And lastly, the United States and Russia agree to join forces to stop aliens.
You know how to get me. My heart says puppies.
Your heart says puppies. Brand, since you're a loser in this game, I'll let you pick puppies first.
Puppies for 500, Alex.
Puppies for 500. Story one starts right now. So, as we already talked about, the Cold War was really between communism and democracy, or communism and capitalism. And one of the most memorable battles in that Cold War is the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, there were missiles on Cuba that the Soviets had placed there because they had developed an alliance with Cuba, because Fidel Castro, communist, we tried to take over. It was a whole thing.
Of course.
And we, in turn, put missiles in Turkey facing towards the Soviet Union. And so there's this standoff where the two leaders of the two venerated countries are arguing over who's going to fire first. And if they fire, then we're nuclear war is happening. We're very close. And those two leaders are President John F. Kennedy and Nikita Khrushchev of the Soviet Union. Now, during this time, tensions were very high. In fact, tensions were usually high when it came to Khrushchev. He tended to be somewhat of a firebrand. But at the last minute, we do not, in fact, go to nuclear war, as you can tell, because we're all sitting here today. But that is one of the most memorable battles of the Cold War, which is the Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, even though that stare down was very much figurative and literal, JFK and Khrushchev had a very interesting relationship. They would talk poorly about each other in the news. They would try to meet together, and they would always have different opinions about what happened. But also going on in the same time as the Cold War is the race to space. More on that in our other stories. But the race to space is very, very important for the Cold War. Both the Soviet Union and the United States are experiencing a time of nuclear proliferation, which we learn means they're building nuclear weapons at a rapid pace. And they think that the technology of ballistic missiles lends itself to the tech needed to launch an object into space. And if you can get to space, they believe you can control all of the planet from space, right? They believe that that is the next wave in how you control an empire, is being in space. So in 1955, the United States announces plans to launch a satellite into outer space. Soviets 4 days later announce that their satellite would be launched before the United States, and it is on. The space race is on. Both people want to go to space. Both countries believe it shows their power, their pride, their might to get to space. So both countries believe these satellites and eventually humans in space would be the ultimate power move and tactical advantage. Mm-hmm. We have people in space, so your land doesn't mean nearly what you thought it means. Everybody on board so far?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So who wins the space race?
Us.
If the determining factor of winning the space race is who got a man to space first, we lost. If it's who got to the moon first, we won.
That's right.
The reason most United States citizens say we won is because the United States likes to say we won at everything, but also because we continued the space race further when in reality we determined we weren't sure exactly how much.
Wasn't there a launch to space kind of like a surprise? Like it just happened and we were like, oh, wow, they did it.
Yeah. That's 100% true. The Soviet Union didn't tell us much and we, you know, weren't exactly kind in return.
Sure.
So the Soviet Union definitely wins in the 1950s. In the 1950s, the Soviet Union dominates the space race. They launched the first ever satellite into space. It was called
the Sputnik.
Sputnik. That's exactly right. 1957. They put the first man into outer space. Anybody know his name?
Donny Osmond.
Donny Osmond is close. He was actually a Mormon from Utah.
Okay.
This is Yuri Gagarin.
You can see
where I was close.
Yuri Gagarin goes to space in 1961. They also launched the first woman into space. For those who believe that the Soviet Union was just behind the United States in women's rights, which they were, but in the case of space, they launched the first woman into space. Her name is Valentina Tereshkova. And that is 1963. So from 1955 to 1963, the United States is owned in the space race. Who is determined to change that? John F. Kennedy is determined to change that. He puts a ton of money into NASA. He wants to make sure we get to space. And sure enough, later on in the 60s, not only would we have the first man that goes around, takes a trip around the world, we also have the first landing on the moon, the first man on the moon, Neil Armstrong. You know about all that stuff. So that's how the U.S. would win the space race. Now, before, here's where we get to dogs, because I know you're wondering why we're talking about space. The Russians experimented with dogs to see if human space travel was possible. Now, that sounds like they're being cruel to animals. In fact, until doing research for this story, I always thought that every dog the Russians sent to space actually died. That was what I thought about the dogs. I thought they just did it and they didn't care. Aside from one dog, they sent over 50 dogs into outer space.
Wow.
Of the 57 they sent to outer space, 50 actually survived. And the ones that didn't, they didn't survive because of a technical failure of the machinery, not because dogs didn't belong in space. Now, in 1960, they sent a brother and sister into space. No, it wasn't a brother and sister. It was just two dogs they named Belka and Strelka. Belka and Strelka are the dogs' names. They are the first beings of any kind to go into orbit in outer space, Belka and Strelka. They survived the journey. They came back home. Strelka had puppies after her journey. And during this time, the Kennedys were visiting the Soviet Union. And there was a dinner between the Kennedys and the Khrushchevs in the Soviet Union. And Jackie Kennedy could not stop talking about how much she loved these puppies. Okay, so she loves the puppies. She keeps talking about them, asks what they're going to do with the puppies. A month later, after this dinner, a puppy arrives at the White House. Nikita Khrushchev sent John F. Kennedy one of his puppies that Strelka had, and the name of the puppy was Pushinka, which in Russian means?
I love you.
Child.
Fluffy. Okay. It means fluffy. And the Kennedys were happy to receive the puppy. John F. Kennedy specifically took a liking to the dog. They also had a dog named Charlie. They were big dog people. Charlie and Pushinka had four puppies together.
Wow.
John F. Kennedy called them the Pupniks. 100% true. And then tens of thousands of people from across the country would write to the White House asking for one of the puppies. They gave two away. Two were given to someone in the Kennedy family. And even though tensions were that high, during the Cold War, the love of puppies between Nikita Khrushchev and John F. Kennedy lent itself to this really nice moment between rivals where a puppy was sent that was in space from the Soviet Union to the Kennedys. And that is the end of story number one. Your 3 minutes of questions starts right now.
Breed a puppy. Do we know the kind of dog it was?
Husky.
Husky.
Yes.
So a question about the dogs that go...
I don't know if it was purebred.
It's a question about the dogs that go into space.
Yeah.
Do we have like cameras, like any video of the dogs in space? Like what were they like going up?
I don't... That's a good question, but I don't know. I know they have video of them leaving and coming back down.
Sure.
I don't know about them in space. Okay. I just don't know. I'm sorry.
Panda?
I don't have any more.
What?
I think you... No.
Question was about the breed? That's it?
Yeah, no, I feel... Here's
how they decide... They gave away two. How they were giving away the two... Two just the random Americans?
After Pushinka gave birth to the puppies, she became a dog that was not great out in public. Nobody knows why that is.
What do you mean when you say that?
She was not good with other people or other dogs, and she actually spent a lot of her time separated from the rest of the family. When they gave away the puppies, a lot of the reasons they gave them away was because it was just too much.
Yeah, but who'd they give them away to?
I know two of them were given away to people that wrote in.
Just random people?
Yeah.
Random Americans?
That wrote in to the White House.
Okay.
Can I have a puppy, please?
Yeah, sure.
Yes, you may. Here you go.
Wow. That's impressive.
You're really doing it.
Did, what ended up happening to Pushinka?
She lived a fairly standard length life and then died? I don't know.
I mean, she was crazy though, right? The dog?
No.
Because they said it had to live separate from...
After she had the puppies, it had to live separately.
And Pushinka went to space.
Pushinka was in space. She was a space dog.
Okay. So space dog comes back and then is sent to America.
On a plane, that's right.
On a plane.
Yep.
And then...
Then has puppies and then goes crazy.
And then does the deed with with Charlie.
That's right.
And they have puppies.
That's right.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just here.
Wait a second.
I'm just here telling stories, man.
So here's my question. You're telling me that Jackie came to Russia.
Yes.
Was in love with the puppy she had there because she was in love with the puppy.
She just was very... She had an affinity. She wanted to had a lot of questions about the dogs going to space, and then the fact that Stroka had puppies. That's when she had questions.
Stroka is the
female dog that went into space in Russia that had the puppy Pushinka that they gave to JFK.
Did Stroka get Prego in space?
No, I don't know the answer to that question. I have no idea. Okay. I would assume not, but who knows?
And Stroka and
Belka,
was it Belka's?
I think so.
Okay.
But I'm not positive.
So did Stroka and Belka live together in a home after they got back from their space trip?
Yes. Okay. As far as I know. Okay. I don't want to, you know. All right. That is 3 minutes is up right now. So there you go.
I have questions.
You said you didn't have any.
I did have questions, but now I have more.
You said breed? All right. I'm good.
All right. U.S. and Soviet.
Feel good about it.
The chronological order is the spoof play on the spy plane.
Yeah.
Or U.S., Russia agree to fight aliens together. What
personally,
do you want to hear?
I want to save aliens to
Yeah, so let's do spoof. Spoof play spy plane.
Spoof play spy plane. You stir it once.
Yeah.
You shake it twice.
That's what you do.
Got it. Okay. Cool. Spoof play spy plane. Second story starts right now.
They're not going to deck the homework doesn't come out until Saturday.
That's the best part about it. Come on, man. This takes place during the end of the Eisenhower presidency. Eisenhower is president before John F. Kennedy was president. And during his presidency is when nuclear proliferation takes
proliferation?
Hold. Proliferation.
What are you talking about there?
It's you back up, but just a little.
I got
No. You start making a lot of nuclear stuff. And what's interesting about Eisenhower's presidency is that he's known for building the interstate systems, bringing in two new states, doing all this great public work funding, also raising taxes a lot, also being conservative. A lot of things that don't jive about his presidency nowadays are who he was. But he also spent more, like military defense spending just ballooned to over half of the federal budget. So over half the federal budget was spent on, you know, nuclear weapons, the CIA spy plane stuff, like all that stuff is where money was spent. Eisenhower, in fact, in his farewell address, warns of the military-industrial complex. Do you guys know what the military-industrial complex
is? Yes.
That's a complex that is military and industrial.
It's when you lose a bet.
Yourself in the music, the moment. You own it.
If you never, ever let it go.
That's right. The military-industrial complex is the idea that we have to continue to build our military for the sake of building military. And so it's a complex that says we have this industry. If we start to, like, go the other way, if we start to say we don't need as much, well, there's going to be people that think we're getting weak. And so the military-industrial complex basically is a machine that's created that keeps making stuff even if we're not at war with anyone. And Eisenhower, after spending more than almost any other president in defense history, he warns about that in his farewell address, saying we're in danger of having this much military for military sake. Was he foreshadowing? Sure, he was foreshadowing. Now, also in 1960, which is the last year of Eisenhower's presidency, we have the U-2 spy incident. You know about this,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's Joshua Tree. You go there, you say, shh.
You know about the U-2 spy incident?
Well, I mean, I was going to go with, I mean...
Boy.
Yeah.
Okay, so since you actually saw Bridge of Spies with me, the fact that you don't know the U-2 spy incident is a real problem.
To be honest with you, there was a lot in that movie I didn't understand. But I do remember that there was a bad guy and he needed to be traded for somebody who was not bad.
Yeah, okay, good. So now I need to explain the U-2 spy plane incident to you guys. Are you ready, Bran?
I'm so ready.
Okay. Basically, here's the short version is, even though the Soviet Union and the United States agreed that their airspace was monopolized and would not be given to the other, the United States would still try to send planes into Soviet territory on reconnaissance missions, right? They believed if they flew low enough, they could be under the radar and they wouldn't be caught. So there was a spy plane. The United States illegally sent this guy named Francis Gary Powers. That's his name, Francis Gary Powers. Sure. And they send him into Soviet territory, even though that breaks all the rules that they had agreed upon. Well, the Soviet Union catches the plane and a missile shoots the plane down out of the sky. F. Gary Powers hits the eject button and he parachutes safely from the plane, but was subsequently captured by the Soviets and imprisoned by the Soviets. Now, the United States, upon this information getting out, claimed that it was a civilian weather research craft. It was not a spy. We were doing research for the weather, and it was operated by NASA, and it's a big misunderstanding. And finally, they admit to espionage. This is similar to the Benghazi incident, where they initially say that it's a 9/11 protest, and then it turns out it was actually not, and they tried to cover it up. So, it's one of the most embarrassing moments for the United States in the Cold War, along with the Bay of Pigs invasion and the Iran-Contra scandal of Ronald Reagan, which we'll talk about.
Why is it called U2?
It's the name of the plane.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I was waiting for...
U2, the band, named their name after that spy plane? Maybe, since they're not from the United States. I don't know. I have no idea. That would make sense. There's the only two places I've ever heard U2.
Well, still haven't found what I'm looking for.
So, yeah, it's a true story. Powers was released 2 years later in exchange for a Soviet officer named Rudolf Abel that was caught in the United States in Manhattan as a Soviet spy. So they each had a spy. They exchanged. That's what the movie Bridge of Spies is
about. Now that you say that, yeah. Hey, where was Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks was, I don't even know if he was born yet.
So
he may have been born. 66? No, Tom Hanks isn't close to 70. There's no way.
Well, I think
he's a lawyer in the United States. This is who you're thinking of. Yeah.
So
there was a ton, as you can imagine, of propaganda during the Cold War, political cartoons that portrayed Russian leaders in as many humorous forms as possible. There's a very famous movie by Stanley Kubrick called Doctor Strangelove.
Tom Hanks or is how 63.
Say what?
Tom Hanks 63, is 63.
So he wasn't even alive yet. Dr. Strangelove is a satire on about nuclear war, and Stanley Kubrick directed. It was a comedy, and it was meant to be funny. A lot of movies would make fun of the Soviets. Well, the Soviets did not have nearly the infrastructure from a Hollywood standpoint to return that favor in kind, but that did not mean that they did not, on the occasion, make fun of the United States. After the U-2 plane incident, there is a guy... Wow, that is... Okay, cool. They create a play in Moscow, and the play is called, and I guess at the time I knew how to pronounce this, but now I don't, Sami Umni Amerikansky Pilots, which is the translation.
Fake!
The translation is the smartest American pilot, is the translation of Sami Umni Amerikansky, you can look at it if you want later, pilot. And basically, this is a spoof play that took place in Moscow that was of the entire U-2 plane incident. It's a musical. It took place at the Taganaka Theater in 1964. It starred the most famous comedic actor in Moscow. His name was Vladimir Vistovsky.
Oh, he would kill. Dude,
Vistovsky was so good. He should have been the lawyer.
His knock-knock jokes crushed.
That's right. During the play, Eisenhower is dressed as a clown during the play and John F. Kennedy as a baby because it ran after Eisenhower had left office. I think that's a little on the nose, but it ran. He was a clown. JFK was a baby during the play. Powers is convinced of the goodness of communism in the play. And the Soviets agreed to trade him back to the U.S., knowing that he's now a spy for them. And so the worry that came out of this really dumb play in Moscow was that Francis Gary Powers, which was this is actually true. Some people believe that he had been turned by the Soviets in Moscow, and he was now working as a double agent or a spy for the Soviet Union. The play revitalized historic Tanaka Theater, also was used as fear propaganda in the United States. Classic United States double standard of thinking we can make fun of something, someone else cannot, doing that. But in doing so, Russia etched a very small portion of their theater culture in a spoof of the American spy Francis Gary Powers and the U-2 spy plane incident. That is the end of story two. Your 3 minutes of questions starts right now.
Talk to me a little bit about JFK in all of this.
So it happens in 1960.
Right.
Eisenhower's president. JFK is elected in November of 60.
Okay.
He doesn't take over until March of 1961.
Okay.
Maybe January. At some point, they moved the inauguration from March to January. JFK is the guy that approves the prisoner exchange. but he was not involved in the commissioning of the YouTube spy plane, nor was he involved in the whole incident of what happened.
Okay.
But he is president when the play takes place.
I gotcha.
Did the so the play made some people upset?
Yes.
Were the songs any good?
The songs were like in Moscow. This was the comedy musical play. I don't know if the songs were any good. I did not listen to any of the songs.
Can you find them?
Yeah, you can absolutely find them.
Is anybody doing this play
now?
Yeah.
I don't think it's right. I think the last time it ran was in the 80s.
Okay.
So Cold War ends 1991. It ran sometime in the 80s.
Okay.
And the first run was this guy who was really famous, Vistovsky. After that, you know, had other people run it, I'm sure.
Okay. Why was it considered an embarrassment for us? Obviously, other than being caught. I mean, spying is a fairly normal thing that almost every nation does. It seems to me that that's not so much an embarrassment. It's just a... Well, duh, we all
kind
of do it.
The embarrassment is getting caught by the Soviet Union in such a fashion. Like, to be dumb enough to say that it's a... I think we made the embarrassment worse by saying that it was a weather mission. Like, oh, we were just looking at the weather in Russia.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't really add up. That doesn't hold water.
Mm.
Yeah. Did any of our people, like Americans, like politicians, go over and watch the play and like try to protest? Was there any situations?
No,
with the
play?
No,
it was used more as propaganda. So like, just like I'm sure they showed him Dr. Strangelove in the Soviet Union, I am sure that people in the United States were like, look at what they're doing. They're making fun of Eisenhower's this clown, JFK's this baby. They're making fun of the American way, which is really what this whole thing's about.
You said JFK being a baby was on the nose. Is he a baby?
He was just the youngest president ever.
Oh, yeah. Okay. He does like a baby. Yeah, like, yeah. No. I can't handle
it. For the life of me, I don't understand the clown bit. Eisenhower was older and he was a general. Like, in D-Day, I don't understand the clown bit.
Eisenhower's legacy overall, in light of all of this, was it tarnished?
Eisenhower's legacy is mostly positive.
Mm.
He spent a lot of money, but he also had a pretty high tax rate. And also, like, he's a president that I think a lot of people would agree on policy, like, nowadays.
And what was the name of the of this story? I'm sorry.
This story? The spoof plane, spy spoof plane.
Plane, spy.
No, spy plane, spoof plane. Spoof right. plane, spy plane.
I think I'm good.
Yeah, I think I'm good.
All right. 5 seconds left. No. Good talk. All right. That's the end of story two.
Was it good?
It was so good. We ready for aliens?
Aliens, here we go. Hey, 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 hey. Mm, that was actually one of the songs from the play. We were able to play it, so it's really good. So good. Mm.
Stir it once is what you're saying.
Stir it once. Okay, gotcha. Twice.
Okay. Let's see if we can. Okay. We ready?
Ready.
I think we're ready. Damn history me.
Story number three starts right now. So I already talked about the stages of the Cold War, expansion, containment, escalation, nuclear proliferation, detente.
Proliferation?
Proliferation. And lastly, Reagan, Gorbachev, and the end of the Soviet Union. Now, Ronald Reagan is known for a lot of things, but as far as the Cold War goes, he re-escalated tensions between the two sides, took a hardline stance on communism or any left-leaning government. So any government that leaned left, this is why most Republicans that are hardline Republicans would tell you that socialism is communism and communism's of the devil because they're big Ronald Reagan fans. And that's what Ronald Reagan did. Left-leaning governments, he basically grouped in there with communists around the world. Now, some of those governments were like Afghanistan, Angola, Nicaragua. He called the Soviet Union, he coined the term the evil empire for Ooh. The Soviet Union. Why did he use that term? A couple of reasons. One, we'll get to this a little bit later, but Ronald Reagan was a huge sci-fi nerd.
Okay.
He's a huge sci-fi nerd. You know what's bothering me is you guys have your phones out, and I don't care if you're paying attention, but if you're looking up the answers.
I'm not looking up the answers.
Okay.
We're not.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
No.
Okay. So Ronald Reagan's a huge sci-fi, sci-fi nerd. Star Wars has already come out. He calls the Soviet Union the evil empire. And so it does this amazing job with the American public of equating the Soviet Union to basically the worst people on the planet that you can think of, which is Darth Vader and all his
right.
folks in Star Wars. That's what he does. Okay. So he teams up with Margaret Thatcher, who's the Prime Minister of England, and they fight against the very soul of communism. They make this a moral argument, right?
Right.
So Nixon eases tensions with the detente. He goes and he visits China. They start to thaw things out. Reagan goes, no. We are amping this thing back up. They're evil. We're good. If you fight for what's good and right, you'll fight against the Soviet Union. And so that is what leads us to his creation of the Strategic Defense Initiative, SDI. In 1983, he creates the Strategic Defense Initiative. Ted Kennedy, later making fun of it, calls it Star Wars. And why would he make fun of it? Because the idea of the SDI is that scientists in the United States would use space satellite laser technology to render nuclear weapons and intercontinental missiles useless. He believed that space was the next frontier, and he believed that utilizing lasers, he could keep anyone from shooting missiles and hitting someone else.
Laser.
Now, later on, about 3 years after its release, people start to realize that we're pouring billions of dollars into this thing, and it, like, to say it doesn't work is an understatement. In fact, in the 90s, people said that the technology that Reagan was talking about was decades away. It still has not arrived in 2019. And so billions of dollars are spent, and a lot of people are critical of this plan, but he gets it passed because of his big push to make us right and them wrong, but we spend a ton of money. And I also mentioned to you, Reagan was a sci-fi nerd. Not only did he love Star Wars, but he grew up reading Edgar Rice Burroughs. Edgar Rice Burroughs, heard of him?
No.
The Candy Saga.
Yeah, that. And he wrote a few books you may have heard of, including all the Tarzan books.
Oh.
And as well as the series that they made a movie called John Carter of Mars, which is not a very good movie, but the book series is heralded among sci-fi fans. It influenced the very nature of how Ronald Reagan governed. Wow. His love of sci-fi influenced how he governed. That's 100% true. He utilized teams and comprised of scientists. He added sci-fi writers to the teams that would consult on the technology for the SDI. We spent money, the government, paying sci-fi writers to develop new technology to defend our country in space through lasers. It's a thing.
That's great.
Now, I tell you that story to tell you this one. In 1985, they had the Geneva Convention, which is the first meeting between Ronald Reagan and Prime Minister of the Soviet Union, Mikhail Gorbachev. And this meeting was designed to have a talk about arms limitations between the two sides, and it leads to a series of meetings between the two, followed by meetings between Gorbachev and George H.W. Bush, and eventually it leads to the end of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War. So this Geneva Convention is a very, very big deal. Now, during the convention, it is noted that Gorbachev and Reagan decided to take a break and take a walk together, and they only brought along their translators with them. So, Mikhail Gorbachev, English translator, Ronald Reagan, Russian translator, they walk together. They leave the talks, they go for a walk. Nobody knows what they're talking about. They're taking a break from formal talks, taking a walk, only interpreters were present. Everybody's sworn to secrecy. Nobody knew what they talked about. No one knew until 2009.
Oh.
And in 2009, Mikhail Gorbachev is doing an interview with Charlie Rose. And in that interview, Rose is asking him questions about negotiations in the Cold War. And Gorbachev said that they went aside to talk and they were sworn to secrecy. But now that the Cold War is over, Reagan brought up what happens if, hypothetically, the United States was attacked by an alien race.
Wow.
Ronald Reagan believed aliens to be real, believed they were probably menacing, and was worried about an attack from outer space. He asked Gorbachev what would happen if the United States was attacked by an alien race. Gorbachev said that the Soviets would not hesitate in coming to the defense of the United States for the sake of humanity. And then Reagan responded that they would do the same for the Soviets, and an unofficial agreement, handshake agreement, was made between Gorbachev and Reagan and kept off the books of the Geneva Summit that if any race aside from the humans attacked either the Soviet Union or the United States, they would put their differences aside and both turn their attention toward attacking the aliens in outer space. They wanted to keep this private because, one, they didn't want to freak anybody out. People would be scared that aliens actually did exist. And two, they didn't want people to think they were crazy. And so they kept it secret. And it wasn't until literally 25 years later, they actually had the story come out. The interpreter did, one of the interpreters was still alive, the Russian interpreter. He confirmed Gorbachev's story that they did talk about aliens and what would happen if aliens attacked, how they agreed to work together. That is the end of story three. And your 3 minutes of questions start right now.
You said that Star Wars,
the SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative,
right, and that was named after Star Wars, the movie.
No, he named it the Strategic Defense Initiative.
Right.
Ted Kennedy later called it Star Wars because of how ridiculous and unrealistic it was. The thing he named because of Star Wars was the Evil Empire. He called the Soviet Union the Evil Empire to gain support, American support for it.
And that was in the...
What? That was, I think that was at some speech he gave with Margaret Thatcher present, but I'm not positive.
Okay.
This is Reagan?
Reagan.
So Reagan, did he ever talk about aliens, Area 51, etc.?
He was a big reader of science fiction. He did not talk on the record about Area 51 or aliens, though.
You're opposed to the idea of sci-fi writers and lasers?
I am pro sci-fi writers. I am pro lasers. I am anti spending billions of dollars of taxpayer money on sci- and I'm look.
How about hundreds of thousands of dollars?
No. How about $100? Maybe. As a joke. Huh.
So they stopped some serious discussions.
To take a walk outside.
Take a walk and talk about it.
Aliens. They did.
They come back.
They come back.
Meetings just kick back off.
That's right. Meetings come start back. Just like that.
Wow.
That's odd. But it's what you would expect.
Three odd boys here. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah.
The sci-fi writers, did anything ever come of kind of those, like, how far did they get with the
Strategic Defense Initiative is thought of as an abject failure. It actually had money going to it until the early 90s. In fact, Bill Clinton's the one that shut the program down.
What's the most ludicrous thing that Reagan proposed with the Strategic Defense Initiative that we still do not have?
I don't know. I think lasers in outer space that are just burning down missiles that have been shot is pretty ludicrous.
So no tech that the SDI came up with actually made its way into...
I'm not sure if no tech did. I couldn't tell you that for sure.
I bet if we restarted it, we could come up with some great tech. A lot's changed since Steve Jobs.
So true. How about that Apple?
Yeah, no. Mm. I can do so much with my iPhone.
So true. I guess my last question would be this. Have aliens ever come to attack and we just don't know about it?
I'm gonna go on a limb and say no. Okay. But I wouldn't know about it.
So you're not an alien boy.
Gorbachev believe in aliens?
Yes.
He did. They were both. This is an important conversation to have.
Final question.
Who initiated that conversation?
Reagan.
Reagan did.
Reagan initiated it.
He said,
Gorbachev told the story on Charlie Rose.
Hey, gotta talk to you.
Here's the deal. Things are serious, but aliens.
Final question. How many of our high-ranking presidents have believed in aliens?
I do not know the answer to that question, and 3 minutes is up.
Huh. You see, I always find it interesting that the bigwigs who would know stuff all seem to believe in the aliens, which makes me concerned.
The bigwigs who would know stuff all seem to believe in the aliens. I told you about two leaders that did, and you think they all did now.
I just don't believe presidents are allowed to see those files.
You don't think so?
No.
Why?
Because.
No, I'm interested by this, but that's another podcast. That's the story time,
it's a
right?
Podcast. Story time.
Podcast.
Hey, all right, fellas. Oh, it's time to confer.
Okay. All right. What are you thinking?
There's some.
Can you talk into your mic for the podcast?
Yeah, sure.
We are recording this.
Sorry, I'm getting into this. There's some that I don't think are true, one of them, but the other two I'm fairly convinced are. I will tell you the one that doesn't seem very correct to me at the moment is the puppy story.
Okay.
I'm not buying puppies.
See, I was going to say puppies. Is that what you're going to say?
What
I love about this,
this is what's
that
happened though, because I've done this. Yeah. I had puppies. I changed it. It ended up being right, and I said I was gonna be. I was gonna go on a streak. I wasn't gonna miss one in December. I can't let you throw me off.
The best
puppies for sure is not a true story.
The best part about this is you guys are not using this to confer and bring to light any new evidence. You're using it to psychologically see what the other one's going to choose and see if you can beat them. And I find that to be really amusing.
We're playing a bigger game.
We are.
I will say the first one is so like historical and on the nose that it's almost like maybe he made that whole thing up. The last one is so, hey, here's a story for Bran. maybe he just made it up. But the puppy one, there were too many things, too many little dinkers that you brought up. that these little things that you say that you use to try to throw us off.
Are you guys ready?
Yes.
I think we're ready.
I'll let Panda go first this time. Which story is my story?
I think the puppies. I'm going to go puppies.
Bran?
Oh, I want to say puppies, but I don't want to tie. This is so hard for me. Story one, not real.
Puppies?
Story one, not real.
The first story one that I
first story. That I I'm read sorry. I'm sorry. The first. No. I'm sorry.
The spy plane.
The spy plane. What are you saying?
He said
I'm
puppies.
I'm saying puppies.
You said
puppies.
Spy plane.
Spy plane.
Spoof play spy plane?
Oh, this hurts because it's puppies. I know it's puppies.
Just go puppies, Brian.
No, you don't go puppies.
He already went puppies.
I can't not go
He's
puppies.
He's locked in final
I
answer
tell you
puppies.
What, I tell no. you what. Here's the deal. Losers go first. The one who lost the last one gets to pick first.
No, he already went puppies.
Spy plane, final answer. Let's do this thing. December streak starts now.
One of you is right. If you got talked out of it again, what are you going to do?
I bet you're right.
I'll be back next week.
You were right. The spy plane one.
Spy plane is so boring. It's such a boring story. Yeah.
Man. Spy plane. The U2 spy plane incident did happen. He did get traded for Rudolf Abel. Yeah. The rest of that story, completely made up. I take that back. The Tognaca whatever theater district is a thing. Vistovsky was the most famous comedic actor. I use real people for all that. They never made a spoof story called The Smartest American Pilot.
Yeah!
But how about aliens being real?
Yes.
Yeah.
How about puppies being real?
I'm disappointed that the puppies are real.
December is going to be such a good month.
I think you guys are tied 3-3, but I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, we'll have to take it to the tape.
Take it to the tape. The tape, don't lie. Guys, thank you for tuning in. You can join us at His Story Podcast, at His Story Podcast. You can go to historyorhisstory.com. Leave us a rating or a review. Tell all your friends and family.
And every review this month, we're donating to communities and schools in partnership with our other podcast, Deck the Hallmark.
If you want a little Christmas cheer, go listen to Deck the Hallmark, for sure. And if it's not
history,
it's his story.